Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. We're waiting for our guest, Dr. Tate, to join us. But, you know, let's get started with the show. I don't know if you saw the State of the Union last night, Dave.
I'm sorry, but I can't watch.
You couldn't do it?
No.
Well, there was a lot of...
You hadn't given me a script to watch and take so I can watch it.
Well, it was interesting. I had a lot of favorite parts, but one was about how awesome the healthcare reform has been, and it's the gift that keeps giving. I knew it was going to be bad, but there's a whole revolution of the healthcare industry, which is going in exactly the wrong direction. We are having the insurance companies and the hospitals completely overtake patient choice, doctor choice. And I read an interesting article about the Affordable Care Act and how it really is Hillary Care light. It's the same thing, the same principles, but they were smart enough to roll it out in a slower manner. But the end point is still the same result, which is going to be us as a single payer, where the insurance companies are the administrators and doctors are going to be subservient and held hostage in the system along with the patients. I think we can see where this is going. In England, they actually have a strike that happened, a day strike with the resident, what we would consider to be residents. And they're doing another one. And what happens when you have a captive audience, when you control from the medical education system to your private practice or your attending status, when you're an employee, what happens is you get controlled. Right now, we're in the process of killing private practice in our country. And they made an estimate that right now it's about 55% of solo and small group independent doctors in the country. Within the next 10, 15 years, they expect it to be down to 30%. So 70% employed. There's 100% employment in the United Kingdom. They may have a little bit of a private practice bent to their practice, but basically they're all under the National Health Service. And what's going on there is that they're asking these residents now to work longer hours for less pay. It's slavery. I knew this was going to happen. So everybody who's thinking how fabulous the UK system is at this point, they're saying that they need to have the residents work on the weekends because there's a higher death rate due to stroke, neonatal and pediatric cases of death because they don't have enough coverage. And their solution is to demand that these residents be called in when needed. So they're working 70 hours a week right now. I think it goes up to over 100 hours, but for basically the same pay, which means you're working more for less. They already don't have time with their family. They're complaining about that. And they're working under duress. Who wants to go to a doctor who basically has no social life, no time with their family, and they're working like for pennies in slave labor? Nobody wants to do that. Is it fair to ask anybody to do that? And they use the carrot of, well, you're a doctor, so it's your duty. You know, medicine is a right, and you're supposed to just take it. Well, good luck to those who actually get sick. You're going to end up selecting out people who have no, I don't know if you want to say it. I mean, the morale is basically nothing right now. You are living for filling out your meaningful use information. And it's the same thing. It's like a cookie cutter paradigm throughout our system. I talked to a teacher the other day because I was interested about this core curriculum crap because I was like, I don't understand the math. It doesn't make any sense to me. And his argument, he didn't have an argument, but he explained to me that he works in a Title I school, and those are the children who are lower economic status. They have to get their lunch, their breakfast, et cetera, at school. And the mentality there in that school is there's something wrong with you, to the child. It's teachers become a social worker. They don't expect them to succeed because they, of course, started off in a bad way. You start off with somebody feeling like they're less than. You indoctrinate them with that mentality. You give them, and he's like, they get lunch, breakfast, everything's given to them, and their mentality is, I want more. So he said when they came back from break for Christmas, people were talking about all the iPads, Xboxes, all sorts of stuff that they got for Christmas. But the mentality is, I deserve it, and you owe me. That's the people who are coming out. These are the same people who are demanding, when they do get into college, and I don't mean the lower socioeconomic, I mean this is the whole education system. From the charter school kids to public school to everybody is thinking the same thing. This is the same mentality of, you owe me, get it done. And that's what they're doing with doctors. So, you know, you just need to, don't pay, I don't have to pay you. You just need to be at my beck and call. Doesn't matter that my insurance changed. It's your fault that the medication's not covered. I mean, this is, it's just pervading the entire society. But I digress slightly. The point is, when you get 70% of doctors, and it's like anything, when they become the majority of salaried professionals, and, you know, a while ago, one of my guests said this, and I didn't, you know, I took it with a grain of salt, but she's absolutely right. As soon as they get their pound of flesh, they have all their doctors lined up in the hospitals, they have their accountable care organizations, which is the satellite version of the hospital, filled to the brim with their primary care docs and everybody else, and the hospitals aren't making as much money as they thought they would after they've decimated their competition, they're going to make you work harder, and they're going to pay you less. What do you think is going to happen? And you've got nowhere to go because you're tied to that system. That's what we can look forward to. During this switchover into the new healthcare system. And it's driven by greed, it's driven by money, it's driven by all sorts of interests that are using doctors and patients as money makers. Patients are paying premiums to their insurance companies without any discussion of what you're getting back for your money. And Dr. Tates is on the line right now. So, Dr. Tates, welcome to Medicine on Call.
Thank you.
I'm going to finish the thought I had, and then we'll get started with you after the break, okay? Because
sure,
we're going to take
sure.
a break in about 6 minutes.
Okay.
So what I was talking about is the fact that our health system is being completely turned upside down and centralized so that doctors and patients are now part of the money-making aspect. It's not about healthcare. It's not about choice. It's about indoctrinating, and it's about mandating that people pay into a system that is generally works against them at this point. Doctors have lost autonomy, and we talk about it all the time on the show, what they can do to treat their patients. Evidence-based medicine, best practices. They're talking about that throughout the entire economy now. Best practice. I heard it last night on the State of the Union. Best practices for businesses, so that they can, you know, cover their employees and standardize everything. And as soon as the government steps in and does that, what happens is we lose control. Cronyism comes into play, and if you're not a friend of somebody, you end up on the outside looking in because the choice and the competition is anathema to this. They don't want competition because they don't want to play on a level playing field. They want everything for themselves. And that's big business. That's the friends of. That's government contractors, etc. And it was laughable last night, Dave, when they talked about small businesses and how it's the government wants small businesses to thrive. That's the apps and cutting regulation. Well, if they have a funny way of showing it, if that's what they really want to happen, because it's open season on small business. If I recall, the Small Business Administration, that department has been shut down. I don't think that exists anymore. That happened within the last 8 years. So things like loans and support for small businesses is gone. You know, we end up having, if you're more than 50 people, having to jump on the Obamacare wagon. They're talking about raising the minimum wage, which I'm sure will put a lot of people out of business. But, you know, it's interesting. I think most small businesses actually pay more than the minimum wage. I certainly do. And I'm sure most doctors and small businesses do. It's the big businesses that usually, you know, get their pound of flesh, get as much as you can from somebody for as little as you can possibly get away with paying out. But they're the ones that are talking with the Chamber of Commerce and all this other stuff. They don't represent small business. They never did. But they get a pass, which is really quite interesting. So when we get back from the break, let's take it early. What we're going to talk about is the immigration crisis and how that affects everybody. And we're not talking about this from a humanitarian standpoint. I'm really tired of the meme that if you question something, that you have an honest difference of opinion, somehow you're racist, sexist, you want people to die. That is the weapon, the Alinsky weapon that's used against people to shut them up. And that's not that's what's messing up everything. I don't care if you're in Europe or in the United States, it's time for people, good people, to stand up and claim their sense of self back. If you have an opinion, you need to be able to say what it is. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I want to welcome my guest today, Dr. Orly Tates. I think most people know or are aware of Dr. Tates because of the issue with the birth certificate during the last election. And we're going to talk about something a little bit different today. Welcome, Dr. Tates. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Well, as you know, I'm both a doctor of dental surgery and an attorney. I was born and raised in Moldova, which at the time was a part of the Soviet Union. Currently, it is a separate nation. Can you hear me well?
Yes, I can.
We were talking about socialized medicine, and I experienced socialist medicine myself as I was growing up in the Soviet Union. What's happening in socialist medicine and is that the doctors have no interest, no incentive to try a new treatment, to work harder, to work longer hours. At a time, the doctor was paid the same 100 rubles a month as anybody else, pretty much in the economy. As a matter of fact, there wasn't much of a drive to become doctors. Mm-hmm. There was no desire to do more than what you have to do to get your 100 rubles per month, which was a wage that barely sustained your living. And I remember members of the government, of the Politburo, of the Communist Party, people who were close to the leaders, had their own care, had their own special clinic where they would get medicine from the United States, from Germany, from Western Europe, where they could get much better treatment. But the rest of the people really suffered because there was shortage of medicine, shortage of treatments, and it was very detrimental to the health of the people. And for that reason, the life expectancy, life longevity was much shorter than it is in the United States, and still it is shorter. If you look at the statistics in U.S., I believe the life expectancy is about 80 years old. In former Soviet Republic, it's maybe 70. For men, it's even less than that, 60-something. People need to understand that when it comes to one-payer system, to socialized medicine, you do see the life expectancy going down. People live not as long as they do today. Their lives are shorter. There will be the shortage of medicines, of doctors. And you see this in countries like Canada, in Great Britain, where they do have socialized medicine. For example, if you need an MRI, in the United States, you can have it within a day. But if you are in Canada or Great Britain, you might need to wait for half a year or so to get an MRI or CAT scan or any other procedures. And by that time, if God forbid you have cancer, the cancer spreads and you're dead. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are definite negatives. As a matter of fact, just yesterday, two specialists visited my office, a doctor who is an oral surgeon and another doctor, she's a periodontist. We were talking and they were saying, we are seeing a definite reduction in number of patients. I'm talking to family practitioners, too many. There is a reduction in the number of patients. Today, insurances became more expensive than they used to be. And co-payments are very high, and people basically get nothing from those insurances. Donald Trump is right. You have to be hit by a truck and be in a really poor condition for the insurance to kick in and pay anything. In my own family, my husband and I, we were paying something about over $20,000 a year for the health insurance, and the deductible is very high. It's like $4,000. So we could never get any benefit from this insurance. It's basically a tax. It's more fleecing of people. Yet another tax. On top of all of the exorbitant taxes that we're paying already, federal, state, local taxes. So now we have yet another tax, which is called healthcare tax. And as a matter of fact, the Supreme Court admitted that this is a tax on people. So we were now taxed more. And so basically, when you add all of your taxes, it means that from January 1st to somewhere in September, you work and give all your money away to the government in taxes. And very little of what you earn is left. It's a very oppressive taxation. And I think there have to be changes. And hopefully we will have a new administration. I think the person who might be able to bring about any changes is Donald Trump. And hopefully we will have a change in healthcare and other businesses. Also, I wanted to mention, you stated that if you disagree with something, you're called a racist. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's ridiculous. I have a very good friend. She's a brilliant African-American woman. She's also a lawyer. As a matter of fact, she has 2 degrees. She's a lawyer and an accountant. And she's a very good friend of mine. And she was born and raised in the inner city of Los Angeles, predominantly African-American area. And, you know, she was telling me that today people who are successful, who try to maybe rent out a room in their house or rent, you know, put some money together, bought a small condo and try to rent it out and have extra income. Now they're being penalized regardless of whether they're white or black or Asian or Hispanic. Because now in Los Angeles, and I don't know how it is in your neck of the woods in Atlanta, but in Los Angeles, they're pushing policies where people who don't pay rent can go to the government. They have programs where they get attorneys who represent them, and basically they file lawsuits and they oppose evictions of tenants who are not paying, and the landlords who, you know, are small landlords have to fight government attorneys paid by the government. It takes forever to evict people. And in the process, those small landlords are being robbed of thousands and thousands of dollars, and they basically lose their properties because, you know, those people, they have mortgages. They depend on having tenants. And when the government steps in and forces you to litigate for half a year, and you cannot get rent from tenants for half a year, you basically go bankrupt. You lose the property. So regardless of what is your race, whether you're white or black or Hispanic, you are penalized for being a responsible, hardworking citizen because you're losing your rental properties. And you see it in each and every sphere of life. It's happening in medicine. It's happening in construction every day. In construction, you know, I'm talking to my patients, I'm talking to my clients, and what they're telling me today, the government keeps the borders open. So there is an enormous influx of cheap foreign labor. So people, Americans who have been in construction all their lives, are suddenly losing jobs to this cheap labor, and they cannot pay mortgages, they're losing their houses, they become destitute because of the policies of our globalist government.
I think you made a lot of excellent points, and points that nobody ever really gets to make because they're shouted down or they're interrupted or they are poo-pooed. But this is reality. This has nothing to do with race. It actually has to do with being an American, having a job, and being displaced. I mean, these H-1Vs, H-1B visas, or whatever they're calling them, they're coming through. They've increased them, right, under the new budget. They've now increased the number of people coming in. So if you have a degree in a U.S. student coming out with an engineering degree, computer science degree, they now have to compete with an H-1B visa person. Am I correct? And they
absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay.
And as a matter of fact, unfortunately, all of the candidates, aside from Donald Trump, were pushing for increase of H-1B visas and increase of number of green cards. And here's another perspective. I'm a mother. My husband and I raised three sons. And we paid a fortune for their university education so that our sons can get good positions and can support themselves. Well, suddenly there is influx of people coming from all over the world who studied somewhere in India or China and paid very little for their education. So they're all competing with those young people who are looking for jobs. And when there is competition, the salaries go down. So who benefits from this? A few oligarchs, a few globalist oligarchs who have on the take our government, our president, our congressional leadership, and who push for increase of those visas. They make billions more, but 99.9% of the population of this country suffers from this because people are losing jobs. People see their incomes going down. And young people who just graduated and who have those enormous student loans cannot find jobs or they find very low-paying jobs and they cannot pay their loans, they cannot support themselves. There is an interesting phenomenon going on today. A lot of young people who graduated from universities move back and live with their parents because they simply cannot afford to live on their own and pay, either mortgage or rent and all the other expenses. It is very hard for young people, and the number of young people moving back with their parents after graduation from college is actually going up.
Well, you know, to add insult to injury, when they reach 27, I guess they're off of their parents' insurance. So now they're mandated to buy some crazy insurance that they don't even need for hundreds of dollars with, you know, $6,000 deductibles. You know, so this system is completely, it's a planned economy, right? I mean, you have everything being centralized and controlled and manipulated, and ultimately everybody seems to be paying more and getting less. And they're now trying to, from what you're saying and from what I've been seeing, reverse the workers so that you have people who are just happy to be here, happy to get a crumb, won't complain, maybe will join a union because, you know, they're used to that type of environment. And you have a whole switch of the economy and of the workers and of the mindset of the country.
Absolutely. And let's look at the healthcare. Let's look at this healthcare internet website. Do you know that they're paid originally to set it up $1 billion? And I read statistics that by now, with all of the upkeeping on this website, they spent $5 billion with a B dollars.
$5 billion? Oh, my God.
$5 billion for upkeeping of a stupid website.
Wow.
It's unconscionable. But what's interesting that the daughter and son-in-law of Valerie Jarrett, Obama's number one advisor, work for the company that is that created and upkeeping this website. I mean, everybody's connected, so follow the money, and let's see how much money is going to all different directions and exorbitant salaries and bonuses and so forth. And unfortunately, our Attorney General of the United States and Inspector Generals of different departments and U.S. attorneys are doing nothing, are doing absolutely nothing. There is no supervision. There is no transparency. You don't see transparency in different departments. You see no transparency in courts. Let me tell you, as an attorney, I had a situation where in the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, I caught a court reporter removing 14 pages of transcripts, removing the whole cross-examination of a party, and removing all mention of this cross-examination from the table of contents. And the judges, I filed complaints, and the judges covered it up. We have forgery that is going on in court and in high-ranking federal courts committed by people working in those courts. I've seen manipulation of dockets done by the clerks. In this case, it's just so egregious. It's criminal. It's just flagrant criminality. And I filed a complaint with the chief judge of the district. I filed a complaint with the chief judge of the Circuit, Judge McKee, with the Judicial Council. Nothing was done. It was all covered up. This is frightening. It's like organized crime. Organized crime is running the country. It's dangerous for law-abiding citizens to enter a courtroom, particularly a federal courtroom, because when you see this criminality, you cringe. You are horrified. I mean, I can sleep at night knowing what's going on in court, what I am facing, and people need to know about it. People need to know how much corruption and criminality is there in court. And I hope that more people vote. In my opinion, the only candidate that is against the establishment is Donald Trump. I hope that more people will vote for him, so that hopefully when he gets elected, he will clean up this corruption and criminality in all departments of government, and particularly in court.
On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
Affordable health insurance was the promise of Obamacare, but for many, the government mandate caused more problems than it solved. This is Dr. Elena George from Medicine on Call, and I want to tell you about a truly affordable alternative allowed under Obamacare, Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare bypasses doctor and hospital panels, giving you the freedom to choose, and with a maximum of $500 out-of-pocket per person and 100% coverage up to $1 million per year per occurrence, you can rest assured knowing you and your family are protected. Coverage starts as low as $107 per month and also includes dental, vision, pharmacy, and holistic care. Liberty HealthShare puts you back in charge of your health. Visit them online at libertyoncall.org. Again, for a true affordable alternative to Obamacare, visit libertyoncall.org or call toll-free 1-800-714-6993 today.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I think one of the most frustrating things that people, that you really hit on, is the fact that we seem to have the people and the government going at complete odds. We know the people have spoken up with their votes in the last couple of elections and to Congress. They are, you know, you have all of these polls where people think the country's going in the wrong direction by like 70%. The economy, the people, the students aren't happy with the amount of money there. You name it, nobody's happy. But the government keeps seeming to go down the same road, and they seem to be doubling down. And I don't find, personally, that there's a difference between the Republicans and the Democrats. And to have this fake opposition, I know you've been following every time they vote for repeal, you know it's useless. They had the chance to defund it in the last budget. They chose not to do it. So, I mean, as a lawyer, what do you think that... I know that we need to go out in there and vote, but really, what can we do to let these people in there know that we're not playing with them? They seem to really have absolute disdain for the American voter.
Well, there are two issues. First of all, people should throw out of office all of the corrupt politicians. And we've seen that people that we elected, unfortunately, they were predetermined candidates, establishment puppets. And you're right. If they really wanted to do something productive, they would have defunded sanctuary cities. They would have defunded Obama's efforts to relocate in the country those individuals, minors who come here illegally. They would have defunded Obamacare. They're doing nothing. It's just all for show, and they all need to be thrown out. There are very few people in Congress who are worth keeping. For example, the person that I admire is Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama. He is a staunch supporter of American people. He's been fighting to stop the illegal immigration. He's been fighting to stop those terrible free trade agreements. This is a person who we should keep in Congress. But most people who voted, for example, for this omnibus bill, which funded all of the programs that they promised they wouldn't fund, they to be thrown out. So hopefully we will bring new people who are not as corrupt. That's one. Another thing, I believe there is a lot of rigging of our elections through the electronic voting machines and electronic ballot counting scanners. I suspect that this is what is going on. And as a matter of fact, I have written articles about it. There is no transparency. We don't know what's going on with those machines, how they are set. For example, you can set a program in those machines where one candidate gets, let's say, one vote, and another candidate, every time somebody votes, gets two votes. We don't know how those machines are set. And there is, for example, with an individual came to the Secretary of State of California, they allow counting or verification of 1% of the votes. So when people came for this verification, they were told, you can count only from those two boxes. You could not pick randomly boxes to count. What kind of auditing is that? It's a joke.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. You know, if people are allowed to check at least 1% of the vote through vote counting by the machine, they should pick randomly the boxes from which they want to check, and they're not given such opportunity. Yeah. All of the cases that were brought, for example, in Obama eligibility, were thrown out of court, were never heard on the merits. So I think people need to organize. Now the most important thing is for people to vote for Trump, organize. Hopefully, if there is a landslide support for Trump, there is less of a chance of rigging. You know, for example, if the vote is close, it's easy to rig. But if, you know, Trump is leading by 15%, 20%, and suddenly the results come so confusing, it's more suspicious. But we've seen this happening, though. In Nevada, I remember when Sharon Engel, who is a Tea Party candidate, she was leading in her election 6 years ago against Hillary. And I remember the day of the election, In the morning, all of the polling organizations showed for leading by 4-5%. And then they had, in the evening, they had some kind of power outage, which was really suspicious. And after the power outage, they announced the results, and the vote was split, showing that instead of...
Dr. Tate?
Yes?
I can't hear you very well.
Oh, hold on. Can you hear me better?
That's a little better.
Yeah, so they announced...
I can't hear you again.
Can you hear me now?
That's better.
Yeah, so they announced in the evening that the results of the vote, and it wasn't that Sharon Engel won by 4-5%. They announced that Harry Reid won by 5%. So they just flipped the vote. And there is a suspicion with those voting machines where, they can do the same thing, mm-hmm. basically set up the machines in such a way that a certain candidate wins. So, for example, if Sharon Engel was leading by 5%, it just flips the vote and it shows that Harry Reid won by 5%. And unfortunately, Sharon Engel did not want to challenge this in the court of law, and that's how it ended. But I think a lot of people should start the movement of challenging the vote and checking the results of the vote, demanding transparency with those voting machines. For example, there were communities where people decided, small communities, let's check those voting machines. We have, let's say, 10,000 people voting. And we know, people knew in advance that, let's say, 6,000 people were voting for a specific candidate. So when they saw that the results were different, they demanded recount, they demanded transparency, they demanded to see the results because... they knew that it was rigged. But we have to start working very hard on basically going to checking the vote. And you can use machines for preliminary results, but we need to do what's done in the accounting. In accounting, there is a dual accounting, usually, where the numbers and the balances are checked twice, and often by two different people. And that's what we need. We need dual verification of the voting machines, where people can vote basically using paper and pencils, and the counting is done not in the county centers, but precinct by precinct, where people, local leaders, volunteers, can check the total numbers precinct by precinct, this way verify what's going on. I think we might see better results.
Well, I take it then you're against the mail-in voting, you know.
You know, this is a problem because with the mail-in, I mean, we need the transparency mm-hmm. because, for example, here in Santa Ana, California, I talked to somebody who did research, and in terms of mail-in vote, he was saying that sometimes we see large numbers of votes coming from one address. We're seeing people on the voting roll who are 100 years old, 110 years old, supposedly still voting. So, there is room for a lot of voter fraud with electronic voting, where you can vote online, or mail-in vote. So unless there is some serious transparency to check what's going on, that might be a problem.
Well, let's talk a bit about the meme that if you ask for voter ID, that's somehow racist. I don't care who you are, if you have a birth certificate, and you shouldn't use your telephone bill or something like that to vote. You have a birth certificate. Everybody's got one. That's not going to break your bank. You know, you have to, or passport, some sort of yes. government ID that proves you're a citizen. How hard
Absolutely.
Is that?
Absolutely. And, you know, in most countries around the world, this is being done. Basically, it's our globalist ruling mafia. We have a small gang of globalist billionaires who are pushing those idiotic notions that if you ask for a voter ID, you're racist. And the reason they're doing this because they basically want to rig the vote, and they want people who are not citizens, who are either illegal aliens or who might be here legally, but they're on visas or green cards, mm-hmm. they're not citizens, to vote. That's the goal. And so yes, absolutely, we need to check what's going on and use voter IDs. And we used to have voter IDs, and now there is this organization of secretaries of state, I think Project Secretaries of State, which was launched by George Soros, where he trained a number of liberal secretaries of state to send directives to precincts telling the precinct managers that they cannot check voter IDs, that it can somehow intimidate people. Excuse me?
That doesn't even make sense.
Only ones who are here illegally, who are voting fraudulently, ones who are voting honestly, why would that intimidate them?
Absolutely not. I mean, you have to check ID to get on a plane. You have to check it to buy alcohol. All of a sudden, yeah. You are intimidated because you're going to vote. That doesn't even make sense. I mean, but that's, we let it get this far. I think the good people of the country, black, white, green, whatever, who just stood down and let this thing go on. And it's so hypocritical. I remember stories of people being intimidated by, you know, upset Black Panther people outside the voting booth. And that was an intimidation. Nobody investigated that. I mean, it's just crazy. Or, you know, the machines breaking down in certain precincts like you described, or trucks being disappearing and then coming back with not all of the machines in tow. I mean, all sorts of stuff goes on. But it's really, I think you hit it again, very on the head. This is not about our country anymore. We've been usurped, in my opinion, by UN-driven global doctrine. And when you come back, I want to ask you what you think about the TPP, because that's a Trans-Pacific Partnership. That is something, another example of our Constitution being null and void, and some other treaty superimposed on our right as American citizens. And it's not just us. It's every country that's involved with this. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I think, you know, our conversation has segued into politics and the election, because this election really matters. Every election in the last, 10 years or 15 years have actually mattered. We've gone down a path that the country as a whole is against. I mean, that's what the polls are saying. I certainly am not happy with it. I don't think you are. And every time we vote for people based on emotion and based on their style, we seem to get ourselves into trouble. Now, the TPP, this Trans-Pacific Partnership, which has not been ratified by Congress, but has the potential to put our Congress, you know, whatever Congress wants, they just have to vote yes or no on this thing. It's a disaster for medicine. They get to grandfather in any medication that's old. They get to put it back on the off the generic list, so they can make more money on any disease they decide they want to make it on. And people like Ted Cruz voted for it. So for all the, you know, forget about what they say. Let's look at what people have been doing. And anybody who voted for that, in my opinion, is suspect and questionable, and works against the American Constitution. I don't think you can see it any other way. What's your take on that?
Well, I agree with you. And let me tell you, the main thing with this agreement, basically those free trade agreements, they take down the tariffs, the taxes on products, the tariff barriers on products coming from countries like Vietnam or Malaysia, where people are paid 50 cents an hour. American citizens cannot live on 50 cents an hour. So it means that more American jobs are going to go to those slave labor countries. More Americans, millions more, will be robbed of their jobs and will see their wages going down. Those agreements were written by the corporations, by the billionaires who are running large corporations, who are taking larger profits. Mm-hmm. They will make billions more. But again, 99% of citizens of this country will be hurt by this. And you see that our corrupt politicians, they all supported TPP. Obama, of course, is pushing it. I felt like throwing up when I heard him talking about it mm-hmm. during the State of the Union address. Hillary Clinton and Marco Rubio and Bush and Ted Cruz, they all supported TPP. And what happened is lately people started to wake up and realize how terrible it is. So for political expediency, Clinton and Cruz made a 180-degree turn, and they're saying, well, no, now we don't support it because it's not good for my American people. Give me a break. Mm-hmm. They're not brain dead. They knew from day one that it's bad for American people. They knew that American jobs are going to go to those countries where people are paid 50 cents an hour. They knew it from day one. They thought they can pull it. They thought that they can be a big puppet of our globalist mafia and support those agreements and then feed American citizens some garbage, mm-hmm. some nonsense. And now, as people are waking up, they're saying, well, we're against those agreements. You know, none of them can be trusted. Each and every person who voted for expedient passing of TPP, or they call it TPA, Trans-Pacific Authority, all of them need to be thrown out of Congress. They're all corrupt, they're all dirty, they're all treasonous, they're all anti-American. None of them can be trusted. Only people who voted against this agreement from day one, who were against it from day one, can be trusted to stay in Congress.
I think Rand Paul is the only one that I know who voted against it, for example. But there's other things in this that we talked about just glossed over, but there's a couple of other things that are really key. They can, according to this treaty, transnational companies can open up business in the United States, but they do not have to hire American citizens as their workers. They can import their own workers from their countries in and with impunity. I've never heard of anything like that. So you can actually lose your job in your own community. You see this great factory, whatever opens up, and they don't have to hire you. Who thinks that's a good idea for American workers? That's crazy.
Absolutely. I mean, we see this happening. We see the voting to add all of those green cards and increasing numbers of green cards. We're seeing them voting to increase the number of HB1 mm-hmm. visas. We see them supporting open borders. By the way, did you notice after Obama's speech, Governor Nikki Haley of South Carolina gave a Republican response? I mean, she's just as corrupt as can be, a corrupt rhino, not any better than the Democrats. Did you notice she said, well, if you are in this country and you follow our laws and you like our way of life, you shouldn't be worried about being deported, something like that. So basically, she is saying, if you came here illegally and you don't commit crime, you should get amnesty. That's basically what she was saying. The woman is corrupt, just as all the Democrats and all of the rhino Republicans. No, even if you came to this country illegally, and according to the ambassador of Mexico in the United States, former ambassador, we have 30 million people here illegally, I believe from Mexico alone, who either came here illegally or overstayed our visas. You can't be secure in your position, even if you don't commit crime. We have 95 million Americans who are not in labor force. We have $19 trillion debt. And the thing is, when so many people are here illegally, many of them are working for cash, a lot of Americans are displaced from their jobs. And that's why we have 95 million Americans out of labor force. And we end up paying every year over $200 billion in social benefits for people who are here illegally. We pay for their education or education of their children. We pay for their health care. They enter the hospitals. They get the health care, and then the hospitals get all kinds of federal subsidies. They get food stamps. They get program aid, public housing. They have multiple benefits, and we are losing over $200 billion that we spend on benefits for people who are here illegally. And moreover, because they displace American workers, we have to pay benefits to American workers who are displaced. We have to pay for their welfare, unemployment, and all other social needs. And we're losing a tax base because, you know, Americans are not employed, so they're not paying federal, state, and local taxes. So I would assume that the damage to this nation from people who are here illegally, it's probably double or triple the $200 billion that we are paying in social benefits for them if you count all the social benefits that we have to pay for Americans who are displaced by them and lost in tax revenues for federal and state governments. I'm guessing it's probably double or triple the $200 billion, maybe between $400 to $600 billion that we are losing. More than our deficit, more than our yearly deficit. So, you know, we have very few people in the leadership of both parties who are not corrupt. And Nikki Haley showed herself as being corrupt. I think Trump, hopefully he'll be elected, he'll have a hard time finding a running mate. By the way, if I can just use an opportunity while I'm here to give the website of my foundation so that people can go and read, it's orlytatesesu.com. My first name is Orly, O, R as in Rita, L as in Lena, Y, last name is Tate, T as in Tom, A, I, T as in Tom, D, as in Zebra, orlytatesu, like esquire.com. And as some of you listeners probably know, I do conduct a number of legal actions of public significance, trying to stop spread of contagious diseases that are brought by people who are here illegally, trying to bring about an injunction where the government will have to check people with infectious diseases and have a release signed by a doctor before they're released from detention in DHS and HHS facilities. So hopefully people can support me, and hopefully people can donate for my legal work. There is a PayPal button on my website. My address is there. So hopefully people go to my website, read what the articles and feedings, and hopefully they donate for my work as well.
I want to thank you, Dr. Tates, for coming on the show. I think, you know, we got a different perspective, and it's all about expanding your knowledge base so you can make an informed choice. And again, people can reach you at Orly, O-R-L-Y, Tates, T-A-I-T-Z-E-S-Q.com, or thetatesreport.com. And again, I hope you can come back in the future. Thank you so much for joining me today on Medicine on Call.
Thank you very much, Dr. George.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.